Welcome! I'm Yuan Ilson.
And I'm Lincoln Murphy. And this is Impact Weekly. We're here to help you make your customers successful. Each week, we answer your most pressing customer success management questions by relying on our years of experience with companies around the world.
Let's get this going.
Hey, this is Lincoln. I'm super excited that our first ever partner success training program at Impact Academy begins on February 5th, 2024. This program is for anyone who works with channel partners, distributors, VARs, affiliates, or basically if any third party sits between you and your end customer, this program is for you. We're really excited to share what we've learned over the years working with companies that rely on their partners for significant amounts of their revenue, like Cisco or PTC, or marketplace providers like Udemy in the United States or Hotmart in Brazil. So join us on February 5th, 2024 for our Impact Academy Partner Success Program. A link to learn more and sign up is in the show notes or description for this episode. And in the meantime, enjoy this replay of episode 35, where Johan and I talk in depth about partner success, its challenges, benefits, and opportunities. Here we go.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. It's time for another Impact Weekly. We have a new question, and let's get into it. This one is about partners. So the question goes like this. I'm setting up our partner success. What would you say is different and what is similar to normal customer success? And do you have any recommendations for me?
Yeah, great one, I think.
Not talked about all that often, but I think I see at least that it's becoming more and more common that companies have several different channels or strategies for their customers. Some are direct, some are through partners. So I think it's a really interesting topic to talk about and dive into a little bit, especially how to think about it and what to look out for and what's different from how you work in a normal customer success way, basically.
Oh, for sure. I just want to echo what you said. This is definitely something that comes up a lot, but it's not talked about very much. So I'm pretty excited to cover this topic today.
Yeah. I think also what I see more and more as well is that it's also because there's a lot more platforms, a lot more products, and a lot more business models now that you see vendors that you have customers with different layers. So it could be almost like you have partners within a customer as well. So I think even though you don't have a partner success or you have partners per se, I think a lot of this applies for a lot of companies anyways, how to deal with these intermediates when you're used to working to direct customers or directly with end customer, basically, or end user.
Totally. I think this is definitely an area where the thing, you know, like what people call their partners or just all the different terms, resellers, distributors, ecosystem, whatever. There's a lot of different terms out there. And I think we're not going to be able to solve for all of that today. But I think basically what we're talking about here is just any third party intermediary that sits between you and the end customer. I think that's essentially what we're talking about.
And I think off the bat there, what's the first difference we notice here? If you have an intermediary, what's the difference working with that compared to directly with the customer?
It depends on the setup of
the
partnership. There are situations where some partners don't want you as the vendor to have any relationship with the end customer. They want to own it. And there are other situations where the partner brings you and the end customer together. They're there, but they're working with both you, the vendor, and the end customer. And so there's visibility throughout the entire thing versus the partner that doesn't want you to have any role in the customer's world except to provide the product or service. So that right there is going to dictate how you approach this. Operationally, do you have visibility into what's going on? Are you going to be able to empower the end customer directly, or are you going to have to create processes and systems and enablement and ops to empower your partner to customer success
the end customer. So it really depends on that setup.
Yeah, for sure. But also we should probably talk about why, if you don't have partners or you don't have that type of setup today, why do some vendors go with a partner strategy? What is the value here of working with partners? And if you're naive here, you could say, why should anyone do that rather than working directly with your customer?
It's a valid question. And especially nowadays where the idea of going directly to the source for just about anything, that's what you would do. Except I would say, how many people still buy from Amazon? Yeah, you could go to the source, but you go to Amazon because the buying process is easy. They have all your information, whatever. So we could go to the source, but we tend to still go through these intermediaries that make the entire process easier. So I think there's a couple of things, though, that we need to understand is, in the Amazon example is actually valid, even in the B2B setting. There are some industries, some companies, some companies that have a buying appropriate experience, an appropriate buying experience that is to go to a one-stop shop, go to a distributor, go to a value-added reseller and just buy everything from them.
Yeah.
Like they don't want 17 different relationships with vendors. They want one relationship with one vendor who can do everything for them. Mm. Now, I don't know if overall in the world that is starting to diminish. I would suspect that in some industries that is still very much in place and is not going anywhere. But so from one side, it's the buyer that wants that experience. They don't want to have to go to the vendor.
Yeah.
And from the vendor side, the idea that there are people out there, companies out there that have your audience as their customer, it is very compelling. If all I have to do is build one relationship with one company and get access to hundreds of their customers or thousands of their customers, that's fantastic. So the draw of that is also very compelling. The other thing is, if I have a horizontal product, just a product that can be used by anybody in any industry, I might look for partners that can apply their domain knowledge to my horizontal product and then get me into these very specific niche industries where I probably couldn't get into otherwise. If somebody in one of those industries saw the potential in my product, they might bring me in, but I'm not going to be able to just reach out into that particular niche and in any meaningful way have them take my offer. There needs to be somebody that can translate what my product does into that domain, into that industry, into that vertical or whatever. So there's that as well. So there's lots of different reasons. It could be a distribution thing for me to get into new audiences. It could be because my audience needs to buy this way. It could be a nice mix of both of those things or other things altogether. So lots of different moving parts.
And I think I think you make some really good arguments there, but I also want to pick up on that. What I call sometimes these partners strategies are a mirage as well. We paint a pretty picture here. If we just sign up these partners, they will do all the work for us. They will start bringing in the customers so we can sit back and relax. If I exaggerate, I received that advice so many times. Yeah, you should add some partners. You should have partners selling for you and so on. And I believe, or I've tried it several times and with very poor results as well. So I think that's why this topic is quite interesting as well, that there is, of course, all of us know several really successful companies doing partner strategies, but I think it's also important to bring up this part of it as well, that a lot of these things do not go full, basically evaporates. It doesn't happen, nothing happens. I've signed several partner agreements that basically brought in zero new customers and didn't pay off at all. So I think it's important to, before you go into this, to also realize where you are as a company. Do you have the resources to invest in this? And do you have the time and energy and so on? And also what we'll cover later, what we call partner success potential as well. I think it's a really important part of this.
That's a really valid point. And I think I think it's really good to talk about that. even though, and what we're going to get into some specifics here in terms of partner success, but I think it's really good to have an understanding of it, to the extent that we've explained it. There's obviously, it's a complex setup, and depending upon how it actually plays out in your reality, but it's good to talk about this, and it's good to even talk about that. What would be the motivation for a company to do this? It might literally be, I think other people could sell my product better than I could, or they can do it instead of me. That type of outsourcing of the sales process, that just usually doesn't work. And anyway, so that, I appreciate you bringing it up, because I think that's something that overall this stuff doesn't get talked about very much. That certainly doesn't get talked about very much. Anything on it is exactly the advice you got. Oh, you should definitely sell through partners. Yeah. Okay, cool. Explain to me exactly how that's going to happen, and find partners that are more motivated to sell than we are.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's maybe not going to work. So I think having that higher level perspective, okay, so why would people want a partner? Why would you go through this? Why would you go this route? All that stuff is very interesting. But let's say we now have partners.
Yes.
So for whatever reason, however we got here, we now have partners, and we've already established what that looks could be very different from one company to another. Right? And it's hard to even, I don't know that there's any empirical evidence out there to support one way or the other. How many vendors have a direct relationship with their end customer versus those vendors that don't, that only have a relationship with the partner? I don't even know. I don't even think we can normalize here and have it be something that's going to work for a majority of people. I just don't know what the distribution of that is. So we really have to take that into consideration when we're going to talk about these things. But I think if we can just all agree that we're basically just dealing with an intermediary here, and we're not, even if we do have visibility into what was going on with our customer, we're not necessarily going to have a direct impact on the customer success. We're going to have to rely on the partner.
Right.
Let's use that as the backdrop for what we're going to talk about here. I think that should cover most.
Yes, I think so too. And let's go back to the question here as well. So this person now, as you say, we have partners already, never mind how we got there and the reason behind there. And now I'm responsible now for customer successing my partners, basically. So that's where we are at right now. And let's talk about how that's both different and similar to how we do customer success in general.
And I think the best place to start is what you brought up a minute ago, which is partner success potential.
Yes.
So this is something we're going to have to deal with once they are a partner. It's certainly something we should have been dealing with before they even became our partner. But let's talk about that for a little.
Yeah. And I think, and as with our customers as well, they evolve, right? Similar with partners, maybe even more. I think it's something you need to reassess the partner success potential as you go as well. But I think just it's very important to understand what is the motivation for the partner here to work, help us with our end users. How dedicated are they? Are we one in many of their offerings, or are we just the sole one, that the only one they work with? I think this is, of course, something, but this has quite big impact on what you can expect from the partner as well. So I think that's a big dimension, or a big part of the dimension, when you look at partner success potential, basically. How dedicated are they? And also what I like to talk about, how well is the overlap between what the partner wants to achieve and what we want to achieve, or even more so, the customer or joint customer, what are they trying to achieve? Or do we have the same goal, basically?
Just in customer success, just straight up customer success, where we are working with the end customer, that alignment has to be there. We have to understand what the customer is trying to achieve. We have to make sure that what we're doing is in line with helping them achieve that. And now you add this extra layer in there. That alignment has to be there throughout the entire sort of value chain. And this is complex stuff. Think on the partner success potential thing, just like with customers and success potential for our customers.
Yeah.
Meaning, can we check all the boxes that indicate that a customer has the potential to be successful with us? That it's not success guaranteed. This is just a minimum viable customer, right? If these things are in line, that means that they have potential to be successful. This is not an ideal customer. An ideal customer would have more boxes to check. This is just, yes, they have the potential to be successful. The same thing we need to do with our, that we do with our customers, we need to do with our partners. So I would say if you have partners that you're working with right now, go back and look at those and say, what would be criteria for a successful partner? And how many of our customers, how many of our partners match that criteria? And those that don't, we would say that they're a bad fit partner. So using the example that you were talking about, Johan, if we need our partner to be 100% dedicated to our product, because our product is very complex, our customers are very complex, their customers are very complex, and yet we are just a part of a portfolio of products that they offer to their customers, that might not be enough. And so we need to be realistic about that. This is not a kind of partner that is going to be able to be successful working with their customers, working with our product. Like, it's just not going to work. So we need to be realistic about it. But there's going to be other criteria that is unique to your situation that you're going to have to come up with to say, if I can check the box on this, then our partner has the potential to be successful. If I can't check that box, then they are not going to be successful. They are a bad fit partner, and we should probably do our best to stop working with them because our end customers are not going to be successful, and we're not going to be successful in supporting them and empowering them to make the end customer successful. A real concrete example of that is, let's assume that the end customer or the end users needs a certain amount of training.
Yeah.
Our partner does not have the resources to be able to provide that training. In this relationship, the partner wants to own all customer-facing activities. So they won't allow them to come to training with us. They need to train the end customer. They don't have the resources. They're unwilling to let the customer come to us. That would be a bad fit partner. So we need to be realistic about that stuff. So obviously doing that before they become a partner is best, but doing that right now and going back and saying, all right, here is a list of our bad fit partners, which probably, by the way, also jibes with the results that the partner is getting or that you're getting with that partner. And then you can manage accordingly, right? So it's just like we would do with our existing customers. So that's really important stuff. I don't want to gloss over how important the partner success potential.
No, I think that's, it is a little bit more complex when you have a partner, basically, because you have to manage two sides or two counterparts here. You have the partner and you have your end customer, which is, of course, your customer, your recurring revenue in the end. So you need to make sure that when the partner's success is equal to your end customer success, basically. And this is where I think the success potential is a work you have to do constantly with as you go. And of course, have that when you start signing up new partners to make sure you get the right ones in. Let's also talk a little bit about how do we do with communication here. I think that's also something that's, given the complexity, you also have to think on, as you say, there's several setups here. So we need to look at the one we discussed earlier.
I always say we want to make sure that we're enabling our partners to do more of their core business, to do what is necessary for them to be successful. We want to empower that. And so again, whatever this is going to look like, but in terms of communication, so going back to what you were talking about earlier about sort of the mirage of partners, we rely on them for sales, right? So we look at them and sometimes they are a distribution partner, but we really look at them as somebody that's going to bring in new customers.
Yeah.
We also do the same when it comes to customer success. We say, gosh, now we have all these different companies out there representing us and they're selling stuff and they can also be doing customer success. Hmm. So we're basically trying to offload or outsource customer success to these companies that, again, you have to look at your success potential there. They may be working with 12 different vendors or 200 vendors or whatever. And like, we're expecting them to do everything for us. It's not going to happen. Even in the best scenario, you want to rely as little on other people as you can. So what I mean by that is, even if they have the resources and they have the desire to do customer success on your behalf as the vendor with their customer, you don't want to leave that up to chance. So to the extent possible, you want to create the playbooks and the processes and write the emails or come up with the templates or come up with talking points and scripts and whatever else, the same thing you would do for your CSMs, we want to do for them. We're not leaving it all up to them. We're not leaving it up to chance. It's actually, if you go a step further, it's not really fair to say, okay, go make the customer successful and then give them no direction.
Right.
How would you like that? Right. We know that doesn't work very well when we're working directly with the customer. And it's certainly not going to work well in a scenario where they're having to try to make the customer successful using a product that's not even their product. That, from a communication standpoint, again, to whatever extent possible, if we need to have this stuff be somewhat generic so they can brand it with their own, they can do everything on their end to keep us out of the loop, fine.
Yeah.
But we still need to provide that. And I think if you understand that and you can start building that enablement for the partner, I think that's going to be your best bet and your best way forward here.
Yeah, no, I think that's a huge point. So it's similar to what we have with customers. We build a customer success plan. We need to have a partner success plan. And I would say also that this can differ between partners as well and goes back a little bit to these partner success potentials. If you identify these are the missing parts, or these are the things this partner can deliver on, and these are the parts like training that we don't see this partner being able to do that, then we should insist on us having that part in the relationship, or that should be part of the success plan together with the partner as well. And this can vary. I've seen this. Some partners can do more and some can do less. We should not also just throw out the partner. We need to revise a little bit as well, usually, because they are different animals as well, the partners.
I think this goes to success potential. Just like we say with customers, like if we're doing customer success potential, this is a moment in time where we say, right now, here is what we can do for our customers. And so customers that don't match this criteria right now, they don't have success potential. Right now, they would be a bad fit. But let's say we're an early stage startup. We don't have a lot of resources. We can't help our customers in the ways that we would maybe like to. So customers that need a lot of strategic guidance, need a lot of technical setup, a lot of stuff, we can't do that for them. Later on, when we grow, we get some funding, we just evolve, we become more mature, we can start doing more things for our customers. We now have more customers that we could identify as having success potential.
Right.
Same thing goes for your partners. If right now you cannot do a lot of enablement for them, you can't do certain things, or the relationship that you have with your partners maybe is still based in a legacy of distrust in your industry. I've run into that situation where companies come in and they're like, this XYZ company that everybody knows, they used to try to pierce the veil of the partnership and go steal in customers from their partners. So now everybody that does business through a channel partner doesn't trust their partners. If that's what you're dealing with, okay, that's the reality right now. But maybe as we work with our partners and we build that trust and some of that legacy baggage starts to fall to the wayside, maybe what we can do for the customer, maybe we can have a more direct relationship with the end customer. Now, if that happens, then the nature of our relationship with the partner is going to change. Over time, what success potential looks like for a partner would just naturally evolve. All of that stuff has to be taken into consideration. And I think that's really big, but you do have to understand what you can and can't do right now. And that will tell you right now whether some partners have success potential or not.
Yes, I agree. I think that's sometimes, especially if you, what I mentioned earlier as well, be aware that usually a partner strategy requires quite a lot enablement to make it successful, and be aware that you have those resources and you have that maturity in the company before you launch. I think it's a big point here. But great. So let's break this down into our three concrete things. So this question was basically, I'm setting up a partner success. What What are the differences and similarities to normal customer success? And what are our recommendations? Our three things. Let me start here. We talked about it a lot, but I want to make sure. Put together a partner success potential checklist, basically. That's number one.
And number two is develop a partner success plan, just like we would do with our customers. What's it going to take for our partner and our end customer to be successful? Put that together.
And number three, keep up with the evolving goal of the partner. And you need to make sure that's in line with the end customer goal as well. So those are the three things. Good luck.
Lincoln here again. I hope you enjoyed that replay of episode 35, all about partner success. If you want to take your partner success to the next level, join us on February 5th, 2024 for our Impact Academy 2-week intensive partner success training. A link to learn more and sign up is in the show notes or description for this episode. See you there.
Hey, thanks for listening. Do you want to bring your customer success to the next level? Check out Impact Academy. We have training programs for customer success managers and for leaders in customer success.